Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, it's all about Indiana Jones. The movie geeks celebrate the greatest adventure series in the history of cinema, starting with a roundtable critical discussion of the trilogy with special guest Jason O'Brien, followed by a conversation with the filmmakers behind the new documentary, Indie Fans and the Quest for Fortune and Glory, Brandon Clayla, Adam McDaniel, Mitch Halleck, and Michael McCormick. Then a tremendously accomplished actor whose role in Temple of Doom will forever live in the hearts of indie fans the world over, Mr. Rick Young. And then the owner behind the most successful Indiana Jones website on the net, from the Raider.net, Mr. Jawad Mir. And finally, our DVD correspondent, Aaron Adidias, joins us for a review of the newly released special edition DVD box set and an in-depth discussion on the upcoming fourth film, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Strap in and get ready to get your geek on. It is an Indiana Jones celebration tonight on Movie Geeks United.
What's this one?
The Ark of the Covenant.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Dr. Jones, again, we see there is nothing you can possess which I cannot take away. And you thought I'd given up.
Our situation has not improved.
Son of a bitch.
That's why they call it the jungle, sweetheart.
Asps. Very dangerous. You go first.
Wow! Holy smokes! Crash landing!
What does it always mean? It's Junior.
That's his name. Henry Jones Jr.
Like Indiana.
We named the dog Indiana.
Trust me.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United. If you are an Indiana Jones fan, this is the place you want to be tonight. My name is Jamie, and the regular Movie Geeks are here too, Jerry and Chris. Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up? What's up, everybody?
And we also have a very special guest with us in this first segment from Blog Talk Radio's own Oscar Show every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern, Jason O'Brien. Hey, Jason.
Hey, oh, I'm the very special guest.
You are a very special
yes.
guest. No doubt about it.
I'm glad I got that over Jerry. You know, now I feel really good.
Wait, were you feeling bad before that? You sounded pretty good in the pre-show warm-up. Okay.
So what do you want to talk about tonight, guys?
Let's talk about Armand White. No, let's talk about Indiana Jones, baby.
Exactly. The world is, like, on edge. This upcoming fourth film is just around the corner. I think it's the first screening is going to be Saturday at Cannes Film Festival, if I'm reading things correctly. It's something like 1 o'clock. And so you're going to hear some actually established critics come out with their reviews, probably starting Saturday night, Sunday morning. But it's a very exciting time. It's been a long time coming. And it has renewed interest in discussing these first three films, which we're going to do in this segment. And I think we all can agree that we all probably are from the same age group, more or less, that these movies as adolescents, as kids, I mean, they really had an impact on our lives. I'm sure we all agree with that. Jason, do you remember the first time that you saw Raiders?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was growing up with, like, you know, Star Wars was such a huge influence on me, and then, you know, getting excited to see this Indiana Jones, which I had no idea what it was going to be like, and then just being so totally blown away by it. You know, and it was one of those that I had to just keep going to see over and over again in the theater that year. And
so you saw it in its original theatrical release.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
1981. I can definitely remember that.
Yeah, June 12th.
I was thinking at the time, but oh, you got the date.
June 12th, I think it came out. It opened on that day, and I think
yeah,
I saw it.
Yeah, that's about right.
I think I saw it that Saturday. I went with my brother, because my older brother, he took his younger kid took his younger brother to go to the movies that Saturday afternoon. And talk about a perfect Saturday matinee movie. It's modeled after those Saturday matinee movies. And it's just exhilarating. Chris, what about you? You remember the first time you watched the first Raiders?
No, I'm trying to think. I don't think I remember the first time watching it, but I definitely remember watching it over and over again. It had been recorded off of HBO or Cinemax or something like that in the 80s, and it was basically on repeat in my household, much to my sister's dismay. But, is there any young man that didn't pretend to be Indiana Jones on the swing set or the, park or something like that?
Weren't you dying to find the one thing that I couldn't find? I could find a hat that was kind of like Indiana Jones, maybe a jacket, but that damn whip, man. There was no were there toy whips back then?
It was probably a good idea that they wanted to keep those away from kids like us, because I couldn't find one either.
Jerry, how about you? Tell me about your experience.
You were saving the best for last, weren't you?
That's right.
We didn't get to see it immediately, that opening day, because I think I was failing out of the fifth grade. So, of course, my dad was like, we're not going to see that Lucas shit or something like that, because I know my dad hated George Lucas because I love Star Wars and all that. So we had to hold out. And then I think a couple weeks, I think after school let out, we went to go see it, because everyone says, you got to go see this movie, Indiana Jones. I'm like, yeah, I know all about Raiders of the Lost Ark. I get like the Bantha Tracks, the Star Wars fan club newsletter, and they're all making a big deal about it. We go see it. Yeah, it changed my life forever. The nonstop action, the nick of time, elements in the story, and just Harrison Ford being just uber cool. This film had everything. And of course, then, after we're done watching it, we went to go see, what's really interesting, the sad thing is I won't be able to see the new Indiana Jones in the same theater. I went to see all three Indiana Jones in the same theater. That's no longer in existence. But my dad was saying, this reminds me of this John Wayne serial we used to watch as kids, where there's a John Wayne serial where he'd ride a white horse.
Sure.
And he would, every time he mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark, this is even as of, the last month, we watched this John Wayne show. I'm like, okay, I've heard this 20 million times, but that's what the conversation usually begins with, the serials that I guess our fathers grew up watching. But Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's on right now, actually.
Yeah, you have it on the background.
I have it on right now, and he's about to go down, and he says right now, why did it have to be snakes?
That's the immortal line. I think that's a key element, too, that makes that character so appealing. Mm-hmm. And it was Spielberg's idea. Spielberg said, let's give him a phobia. And he looked at this list of top 10 phobias, and number one was public speaking. Number three was snakes. And he said, why don't we just do snakes? And he asked Lawrence Kasdan to write in the script, which should be pointed out. Lawrence Kasdan wrote the script to this first Raiders of the Lost Ark based upon an idea, credited idea from George Lucas and Philip Kaufman, another terrific filmmaker. And by all accounts, everyone involved said that this was one of the most perfect scripts that they've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
It just sparked off the page. And to give you guys a little insight out there, because I'm sure we're bombarded with indie fans, and this is no news to anyone, and you guys probably know the details much better than any of us do, but this idea was hatched in 1977. Spielberg and Lucas were friends, of course, and they were on the beach, I think, at the time, and Spielberg was going on about how much he wanted to do a Bond picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Or something like that.
This is in Hawaii, right?
I think it was in Hawaii, and
right
Lucas
after
said,
Star Wars opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Lucas said, I have something better than Bond, and started to talk about this archaeologist and the adventures, and he said, and they agreed to do it by a handshake right then and there, and he said, if this turns out to be successful, Steven, you got to do all three, because I view this as a trilogy. And they were all on the same page, a loving kind of a tribute to those 1930s serials. It was always intended to be kind of a tribute to be entertainment in a way. Mm-hmm. It really is like an A-list entertainment that pays homage to a B-list entertainment.
Right, yeah. Right.
Do you guys have any favorite moments that stick out for you in Raiders? I know there's a wealth of them.
There's so many.
What sticks out in your mind, Jason?
Well, one of the things, I was 10 years old at the time, and being so impressionable, You know, I remember sitting in that theater the first time and being so nervous about the opening of the Ark. I was like, gosh, should I really be looking at it? You know, it's like, you know, when I started seeing what was happening to everybody, I was like, man, you know, because it was just so real and everything. So, I mean, that sequence to me still is, you know, because I can remember back to, you know, just the how awesome that scene was, like so building up to that, like what's going to be in there and what's going to happen.
And how awful as an adolescent, how terrifying the face melting was.
Oh, I know.
On top of that, yeah.
I mean, that's away.
Just to let everyone know, if you're listening and you want to join a great conversation with other Indiana Jones fans, we have our chat room up and running. Jerry and all of us at some time are going to be keeping an eye on and keeping the conversation going. Just click chat available, and you will be right on there.
And I'm
if you want
up with all of you. It's just my computer, the connection went dead, so if I was behind, I apologize for that.
And if you want to call in, the number to dial is 718-508-9477. Actually, we have our first caller, and then we'll go to the rest of you guys about your favorite moments from Raiders and the other films. We have a 301 area code on the line. Go right ahead.
Is that me that you're talking to right now?
That is you, I think.
Okay, how about that? Hey, Jerry, this is Sean. I did call in. I promise I'd call in.
Oh, my God. Don Taylor in the house. Oh, my God. This is going to be embarrassing. Okay.
Well, I couldn't help it. This theme was just too perfect. I mean, what a theme to come in on with Raiders. And, you know, all we ever do at the gym is talk about movies of Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark
anyway.
Yeah,
I know. And where were you today?
Well, this is my day off, so.
No wonder I was so depressed. Okay.
But, yeah, you know, what I was doing while you guys were talking is I found it. I found this this Raiders of the Lost Ark opening June 12, 1981 invitation from the Star Wars fan club. And it's got this beautiful, it's got a great, beautiful, full-color illustrations of, well, pictures of the events that took place. And I can't believe I still have this. I still got the envelope.
You got that?
Yes, I still have. I should bring it into the gym and show it to you, huh?
No, because I'll probably sweat on it, so you probably want to keep that at home.
I think it's very funny that two grown men are sweating it out of the gym talking about Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Oh, dude, Jamie,
I need to hang out at the gym.
We have several grown men talking about this stuff. Let's bring in Steve Richards while we're at
Steve,
it.
Steve, that's right.
I bet.
Let's bring
Steve. So John, John, is it? Is your name's John?
Sean.
Yeah. Tell me about some of your favorite moments from the series while you're on the phone here. What sticks out in your mind?
Well, goodness gracious, you guys kind of hit most of them, but I still love my favorite scene in the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies is still from the first movie. It's basically when he decides. When he gets angry and he says he wants to get that Ark back, when he lost it and he wants to get it back, and the guy says, wait a minute, it's gone in the truck. He says, truck? What truck? And he takes off.
Yes.
That whole buildup is my adrenaline builds every time I watch it. I mean, when I'm sitting in the seat, I'm no longer sitting against the seat anymore. I'm up in the seat because I'm Indy. I'm the one who's got that aggression. He's going through the motions. He's going through the chase. He gets on that horse and he rides. He does just like the old serials. He jumps on it. But Steven Spielberg has the perfect eye. I consider him the Neil Adams of movie directors. He's got perfect eye. He's got this wide-angle view, and he just gets it so that it's right in your face, and you are experiencing it. I don't even need 3D glasses. I'm there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That whole thing, and from the point when he gets on the horse and runs off to the time when they veer off and they split because he's got the truck and he's got the Ark, it's like that was wonderful. That was the whole movie. That was wonderful. Everything he does, he is so tenacious. I mean, I haven't seen a character that tenacious since what's the guy's name? John McClane in Die Hard.
Yeah,
when you started with that one.
Yeah. You know what? That was one of the – when they crafted this idea, that was the only sequence they had in mind was that truck chase. And Indy, like, going through on the front of that Jeep and having to go under it and from behind with the whip hanging by it. That was the one scene they had in mind all along. And so when they're interviewed a lot of times, the makers, they say that that's their favorite moment from that first one.
Well, it shows. I mean, that's my first feeling when I think of Indiana Jones is my first one. But you just, you know, I even when I consider the worst one, I love. I love them all.
What's the worst one?
Well, I got to say for me, you can't say it's the worst one when it's my opinion. But for me, I think Temple of Doom is a little bit below than the other two.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that, man. It's
Jamie's favorite. You know what? We're gonna hear quite a lot of this tonight because everyone has their own opinion about which one is the weakest of the trilogy. Well, they're all three, you know, classics.
It's okay, Jerry, you know I love you. I'm not gonna dog this. I love all of them.
Yeah,
they're all fantastic.
They are.
We all have the ones that we cling to more, and that's the one that's a little bit less. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, buddy, for calling in, Sean. And
thank you, Sean.
We'll see you at the gym, man.
Oh, no problem. I'll see you tomorrow at the gym. All right. We'll
talk
more.
Definitely see me. It's raining. You'll definitely see me.
Okay. All right. You guys have a great fun show. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Favorite moments, not only from the first one, but from the trilogy. What sticks out for you, Chris?
Well, the first one is my favorite. Most of my favorite moments are from the first one. I think obviously the part where Indiana Jones, you know, the guy comes out with the gigantic sword and he's waving it all over the place, and you know, Indiana Jones just pulls out the gun and. You know, cacked him right in the face or whatever. That's a great scene. And, of course, my girlfriend hates it, and I'm sure every movie nerd's girlfriend hates it because every time that scene comes on, you know, I've got to say, well, you know, that wasn't actually in the script. That was Harrison Ford was sick that day, and I'm sure there's a million and a half nerds all over the country that do the same exact thing.
Yeah. But, you know, we talk about this all the time with Spielberg. What makes him a great director is that he's great on the fly. He's great thinking on his feet. So that when Harrison Ford came to him and said, can I just shoot the guy? For Spielberg to be open to that, it's brilliant. And,
yeah,
and you're right.
I can still remember the huge laugh that scene would always get. It was like the biggest laugh in the movie.
Yes, yes.
Because everybody thinks that is so hilarious.
Jerry, what kind of moments stick out for you from the trilogy?
Okay, from the trilogy. Well, the first one, actually, the first time I saw it, the first thing was when he gets on the submarine. That was my favorite moment from the first time.
And you know where that submarine was from?
Yeah.
You do know what that submarine was from?
Isn't that from Das Boot? Or
yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but my other favorite scene, the other scene that you told the kids at day camp, you all just talked about all summer. Was when he gets under the truck with the whip and everything.
Oh, yeah.
At that time, I just thought that was out of this world. Yeah. That whole sequence was incredible.
Absolutely. We have a couple more callers on the phone. I have a caller here. This is odd. A caller, it's showing up as anonymous.
Oh, maybe it's a guy who wrote for Primary Colors or something.
Right. Let me see if I can pick up this line. Anonymous, are you there?
Am I the anonymous person?
You are anonymous.
It's Joel Valley from Mexico. How are you guys doing?
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Like Mexico's far away, so it doesn't register for you guys.
Yeah, it's just so odd that it comes up anonymous. That's weird. How you doing, buddy? Tell us about your thoughts on Indiana Jones and your favorite memories of the series.
Yeah, you guys were actually talking about my favorite scenes in the first one were the comical moments.
Yeah.
Obviously, the guy with the swords. But also when Miriam hits him with the mirror. And all you hear is the scream, like, outside of the boat. The shot is outside of the boat. Probably my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let me pick up this other call. Hang on the line there, Joel. I got you still on
here.
203, go ahead.
That's me, Mitch Halleck, from Indie Fans and a raving reporter for the Raider.net and the IndieCast podcast.
Oh, man. We're doing great, man. Your segment is coming up in about 10 minutes. I didn't get area codes from you guys. Could you hold on the line? Because I can't wait to talk to you about this project. Thank you very much, Mitch.
Thank you.
I think this series has affected all of us in a profound way, and it's great that it's just built upon fun, you know? Even as dark as they say that the second one is, I rewatched it again this week, and it's got just a tremendous amount of fun-spiritedness in it. I find it like the equivalent of 10-year-olds trying to gross each other out, you know? It feels like that kind of movie to me, in a way.
Uh-huh.
It, It's just fantastic. So Joel, tell me about your thoughts on the other two and what you're looking forward to in this fourth chapter.
Well, I really do love Temple of Doom. I know a lot of people don't like it.
Why do a lot of people don't like it? I don't understand that.
I love Short Round. I mean, Short Round is hilarious as hell. He just makes that movie for me.
Yeah.
I think he's funny.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing, like for me with Temple of Doom, that it's the lesser of the three in my opinion. But I mean, they're still all great films, like they were saying before. But it just the first one and the third one, they're kind of steeped in a different kind of mysticism that's, you know, a lot more intriguing, I thought, than like the rocks and all of that. And that's what I always thought was the greatest thing about Raiders was, you know, the fact that you had the Holy Grail in the third one and you had the Ark of the Covenant in the first one. You know, so it had a different feel to it.
I have a theory about the second one, but only if people will let me talk about it later on, I'll talk about it. But
well, I plan on going on a tirade about the second one in our last segment when we review the DVD box, because the DVD box has special features, including interviews with all the makers, and they're all pretty unanimous in their thought that it's the less successful of the three. The people
that
actually made it. Spielberg and Lucas, and actually financially, yeah, it was the least successful, actually, by about $50 million. But I just can't get into that vibe because I find it the greatest adventure of all three, and I find it the most joyful of all three, and I'm going to defend my argument.
A high concept pitch. I can tell you how it was pitched. I mean, the first half is like Lost Horizon. The second half is like Gunga Din. What's not to like about that?
Oh, I still love the film, and I mean, it has one of my favorite Indiana Jones scenes in it of all time, with on the bridge, Mola Ram.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so great.
Yeah.
I mean,
speaking of line readings, like Harrison Ford's line readings, he has a couple in the first one especially, and I mentioned one pre-show when he's like, Belloc, Belloc.
Yeah, when he says Stalas and Belloc.
Belloc. And then he has one where he's like, Karen Allen's like, what's that? And he says, they're dates. You eat them.
Oh, my favorite one, my absolute favorite one is whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
Asking for the whiskey bottle. Whiskey.
Right.
Yeah.
Classic. And how great is Harrison Ford? I mean, this series, if you think about, they were considering Tom Selleck, and that audition footage exists. The fact that they went with Harrison Ford, and this was Spielberg's decision, because he saw a picture of Han Solo, I think, in Lucas's office, and he said, well, that's our Indiana Jones. He said, we can't do that because he's associated with Han Solo. And he said, no, he's perfect. So Spielberg won that out, and, you know, thank God.
Thank God. I mean,
the same thing with The Last Crusade, because Spielberg wanted this father and son relationship in The Last Crusade. And he had just one idea about it. He said, I just see them starting with the first time they meet in the movie, he says to him, yes, sir, and to kind of establish that comedic tone. And that the father character always calls him Junior until the end when he needs to reach him the very last time, and he says, Indiana, let it go.
Yeah.
And that represented the full circle of that relationship. And it's kind of touching in a way. But he always wanted Sean Connery. And George Lucas said, you can't go with Sean Connery. He's known as James Bond.
Right.
And I'd like to address
Spielberg
that.
Spielberg said, exactly. That's what inspired us doing this trilogy to begin with, James Bond. It's perfect.
Those Lucas instincts, they're at it again.
Yeah. No, I think that's the whole thing, because Harrison Ford, as early as Blade Runner, proved that he could do, you know, something besides Han Solo. And Sean Connery, as early as with really The Wind and the Lion and The Man Who Would Be King, proved he could do outside of James Bond and The Hill. So I think I've always thought that was inspired casting to have Sean Connery.
Oh, it's very much so, and it makes complete sense. And talking about George, this is what surprises me, because talking about George Lucas's instincts, they reigned in Temple of Doom. It was his idea to have kind of the middle part of the trilogy be the darker horse, like Empire Strikes Back. And Spielberg really resisted that, and so according to these interviews that Spielberg's given, he felt like kind of, okay, I'm happy to bring George's vision to the screen. He felt kind of like a director for hire, which is just amazing to me, because that movie is so purely Spielbergian. In the framing and the activity in the frame, you watch that ending fight, in Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most joyous part of the movie to me. When he's fighting the big guy, you know, with the red sash.
Right.
And the rock crusher, whatever they're on. And in the same shot up above, Short Round is mimicking his fighting moves with the young guy with the voodoo
right.
doll. Just joyous framing.
And that's classic Spielberg, as you said. I mean,
it is classic Spielberg. Yeah, it absolutely is. So, Joel, thank you, man, for hanging on with us all the way from Mexico. You are the man, and I appreciate you calling in tonight,
buddy. Always appreciate you.
Yeah, I just wanted to show my love for the trilogy, and I'm very excited for the next one. We're planning a little trip, actually, to the big city where it comes out.
Wow. And what's the big city near you, Mexico City or?
No, it's Monterrey, actually, is where I live.
Monterrey.
Wow. And they have, like, theaters with reclining chairs, and you can order food and stuff, so that's how I'm going to go and see it.
There you go, man. That's what it's all about. When we have our discussion on Indiana Jones between ourselves on the 25th, you got to call in and share your thoughts too, buddy.
Yeah, really.
I will try to do that. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, man. Bye-bye now. You know, we have three minutes left in this segment. Jason, tell me what you think of the fourth one. What are your hopes and what are the vibes you're getting so far?
Jeez, I tell you, I mean, it's one of those, you know, it's taken so long. It's almost hard to believe it's here finally because you heard so many rumors for so long. You know, so you got such high expectation for it, you know, because – the biggest thing I'm kind of looking for is kind of the nostalgic aspects, you know, that kind of, which I hear a little bit of in some of the advanced things I've heard, you know, that kind of harken back to, because I think the Ark is back in it. And, you know, so it's hard to, like, have such high expectations and then, you know, end up being disappointed. So, but God, it's.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened to the Star Wars trilogy, but I think that rightfully so, because I think we can all agree that those were lesser films.
I have something to say about those.
They just were. Go ahead, Jerry.
No, I think, and this is actually what I think will be different about this one. This isn't a prequel. This isn't like,
right?
Like the young. Even I'm not a fan. I mean, they're okay, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, but Lucas seems to think that he needs to fill in all the gaps to his characters to leave no imagination to the viewer and to the audience.
Right.
And that's not the case with this film. This is a continuing adventure.
Right.
So I think this will automatically be better. I didn't need to know all that. That's all the prequels, just backstory, which any screenwriting class will tell you is not important. You can take care of that in five
right.
minutes of your movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. So I don't see this. I don't see this having the same problems as the prequel trilogy.
This takes place 19 years later. It takes place in 1957.
Yeah.
Right.
19 years after the last one. It's the real time. These characters have lived lives in between. So,
and
obviously,
age.
I mean, you can't fake it. People have aged.
Right.
And I think that's going to be endearing because we like our Indiana Jones vulnerable, and he always reigns at the end. So I think it's going to be a slam-bang entertainment. That's what I'm hoping for. And I know are, too,
I think
Chris.
You're right. I think you're right.
I think
one of the things that got me most excited was Karen Allen coming back.
Yeah.
And doesn't
I
she look great?
Character. I mean,
those
scenes between those two and the first one were just so incredible. Like, from the very first when he shows up in the bar and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you sense this history between them. I mean, it's just, it's so great that they're going to bring her back.
With that opening slug to the jaw.
Yeah, exactly.
That greets him, and you're like, oh, this is a classic combination, a man-female combination like they used to do.
I've learned to hate you in the last 10 years.
Chris, as more trailers come out, are you feeling good about the new indie any film, the more you see from it?
I definitely have liked all the trailers that came out after the first trailer. I didn't like featurette feeling, that straight to video feeling that the first trailer had. But the following trailers have definitely been a lot better. And, you know, like I told you in private, you know, I might have a bad feeling about the movie. That doesn't mean I won't be the biggest nerd sitting in the theater with a bone on opening night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that goes without saying for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all feel the same way. Guys, I know that Chris, you're taking off, and Jason, you've chosen not to stay for the thing, right?
Well, I'm meeting a couple friends. I have some drinks to consume, so.
Really?
Oh,
you
have one
you
for
have,
me.
You
yeah,
have
I will.
Friends you go out and drink with?
Well, like on occasion, I have to get out.
This is something I never knew about you, man.
Oh, yeah, well, see, you know, you're discovering new things. I mean, geez.
All right, Jason. Thank you so much, buddy, for joining us.
Man.
And tune in to Jason's show Monday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern. I always do. I'm always there in the chat room, so it's a great time. So thank you, Jason.
You bet, man.
All right, bye-bye now. And Chris, buddy, thank you so much.
All right, man. Good to talk to you. Good to talk to you too, Jerry.
Yeah, likewise. We'll see. Talk to you on Sunday?
Yes, yes.
Definitely. Cool.
All right, bye-bye, buddy. This fellow movie geek, Chris, joining us for a little conversation about the first three indie films. And now we're ready for our first big guest segment. And, man, we have so many lines open. We have so many lines up on the switchboard. I really have to differentiate who our guests are and who our listener calls are. Listener calls, I will get to you as soon as I possibly can, but let me introduce our next series of guests to the show. Indiana Jones, as everyone knows, is a global phenomenon, and its impact on the culture is profound. And for evidence of this, look no further than the new documentary, Indie Fans and the Quest for Fortune and Glory, the ultimate fan tribute to the ultimate series of adventure films. This spectacularly entertaining film recently celebrated a premiere at the Newport Beach Film Festival, not to mention highly coveted press from the likes of film sites across the web and also USA Today. Here to tell us about their Jones for Indiana Jones and the film they've created to honor his legacy are the film's director, Brandon Clayla, poster designer Adam McDaniel, publicist Mitch Halleck, and, of course, our very own show composer and the composer of Indie Fans, Mr. Michael McCormick. I'm going to bring you guys on one by one. Hopefully I have the right lines here. Okay, give me 1 second. My switchboard is very slow. My switchboard is not cooperating with me at all because my switchboard is overloaded with phone calls. Jerry, you want to hum the Indiana Jones theme while we work on this?
No, but I'm all right. I'm just in the scene right now where I just punched the guy out of the truck. We're in the truck chase sequence.
Okay. I'm doing my best to unmute these lines and nothing's happening.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's going to be fine. Let me refresh this the switchboard page and see what happens. Give me 1 minute.
Okay.
God bless Blog Talk Radio. You know, it's so great when it works, computer technology, and sometimes it just gives you a fit. But we knew this would be a busy show. And
yeah, I mean, I'm having trouble, you know, on my end, too, so.
Our switchboard is overloaded. What's going on in the chat room? Give us an update of the chat room before we bring
everyone's just going nuts. I mean, Jason O'Brien is still there. Oh, wait, he says he'll give us a topic. We have Jason. We have James Gillette. We have Olivier's in there. Olivia's in there, and Mike and Alex from Horror Movie Fans Radio. Everyone's in here. James. I want to see Blog Talk Radio every time I can't hear the show live. Hey, I'm with you right there, James, brother. I'm there with you. And the Rub.
James,
is there.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
The Rub is in there. All of our friends are in here.
Terrific. James had James actually called me earlier in the night because he's had some trouble the past few weeks listening in on the show, and he said, Man, if it doesn't work tonight, I'm gonna shoot somebody.
I know who he's gonna do too. Michael McCormick, by the way, is 615.
I have everyone's area code, and then we have about four other callers on the line outside of our guests. I think that's why it's working, operating so slowly. I'm trying to reload the Blog Talk Radio page now, and it's taking its sweet time. So just give me a moment, just to let everyone know. Outside of Indiana Jones, just for a moment. Earlier today, we interviewed Rutger Hauer, in another iconic film, as you know, Blade Runner, and several others actually that are iconic.
Right.
But I think it's safe to say it is the wildest, kind of strangest interview we've ever given.
Yeah, it is. It is without a doubt it was surreal to say the least that we're interviewing the Hitcher, to put it mildly. But,
yes, and there were several times when we got that Hitcher vibe.
Yeah, we did get the Hitcher vibe. We didn't mean to get that Hitcher vibe, but we got it.
Yeah, and so that interview.
It was a great interview.
It was. And that interview will
premiere.
Okay, now I'm getting feedback on the phone. That interview will premiere Sunday, right? Exactly,
yeah.
Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm bringing back up, Jerry, if you can try on your computer to see if you can operate the switchboard, to see if you can bring up the switchboard
right.
And operate.
Yeah, all right. Let me do that then. Okay. Let me do that. I'm gonna go to a. I'm gonna have to log out of my. Okay, I'll do it. You gotta give me a minute here.
Well, you don't have to log. Well, I mean, the other way, you don't have to log out. I think you might be able to get to the switchboard without. Well, maybe. Well, maybe.
No,
not.
No, I'd have to.
All right, I'm
okay,
my computer's coming back up now. Sorry for the technical difficulties. This actually rarely
it's
happens.
It's live radio,
us.
Folks.
Of course, it happens on the busiest show we've had in a long time.
Yeah, the chat room is hopping, and we appreciate all of you in there.
So a little bit later, we'll be after the indie fan segment. We'll be discussing Temple of Doom with a co-star in that film. He's from that infamous first scene in the nightclub, Club Obi-Wan. You know, that's ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's... All right. All right, let's...
Okay. Michael, say something. Are you there?
This is Harrison Ford.
Wait, we got Harrison Ford? Oh, this is better than I thought. Okay.
You watch Indie Fans. You go find Indie Fans on DVD. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's horrible. I'm sorry.
All right, I guess success there. Thank you for joining us, Harrison. We 203, are you with us?
That is me, Metallic.
Okay. Hey,
that's
Mitch,
Mike,
okay.
By the way.
Yeah, of course we know that, buddy. We are up and running. 818, are you there?
I am indeed. This is Adam McDaniel.
Hey, and last but not least, 615, are you with us? Hang on.
Yeah, that's...
615, you're up.
Hey, it's Mike.
Oh, fantastic. Well, do we hang on. I'm missing one person here.
Do we have Brandon?
I think we're missing Brandon, the
yeah.
star
Brandon,
of this whole thing.
I think Brandon's 805.
Brandon, are you with us?
I'm here.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh,
there
well. We are.
I was worried. I thought he was going to be at the man's screening tonight. Oh, well.
Oh,
I'm like,
fantastic.
Hey, don't forget about me.
We are up and running now, and I'm glad to have all the indie fans team joining us tonight. And I want to start out, and Brandon, you can speak to this first, and then we'll go around. Which film of the trilogy stands as your favorite, and tell me about kind of favorite moments that you have in the trilogy and how the movies have changed your life.
Hands down, Temple of Doom, and the whole last conversation of everyone talking about that, I was like wanting to jump in so badly. Yeah, Temple of Doom is my favorite, no problem. And even you guys hit it on the head. It's just the one that's the most action-packed, and it has that magical quality, and it's just like unlike any other. And it's funny because Spielberg and everybody says, oh, it's bad, and fans don't like it, and it's dark and creepy and all that stuff. And I mean, we've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of indie fans, and everybody loves Temple of Doom. Everybody loves Short Round. And I even just out of curiosity looked it up online, and Roger Ebert, who is not my favorite film critic at all, said, Temple of Doom was one of the greatest thrill rides ever. So I think Temple
of
Doom just gets a bad rep.
One of those great bruised forearm movies, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm a softie when I watch movies anyway, but I was watching Temple of Doom again last night. And when it ended with the elephant blowing the water on them and Short Round saying, uh-oh, and covering his eyes, and then they kiss, and the music crescendos, and it ends, I honestly found myself in tears because never before has a movie brought me back to my childhood
so
profoundly than Temple of Doom. It was just a magical experience just revisiting it. Do you have favorite moments from Temple of Doom or from the film series in general?
Man, they're all great moments. I mean, we sat down with Vic Armstrong, the legend that he is, and on our documentary, and hearing him talk about the rope bridge and fighting Pat Roach on the conveyor belt and moments like that are just unbelievable. And it was funny, like you guys said, with the shot where Harrison's fighting the giant Thuggee and Short Round's fighting the Maharaja and back and forth. I've seen that Temple of Doom in theaters a couple times, and most recently we watched it in Santa Monica at the Aero Theater, which is a wonderful little theater, and I'm sitting there with 10, 20 other indie fans, and we were all sitting there watching that scene, and we were all like doing the moves and getting into it, and it's just every moment in that one to me just stands out a little bit above the rest just because they're just jam-packed. But yeah, I mean, and the dialogue in that one is my favorite. I think it's so well written. It's just great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it feels like they threw everything but the kitchen sink in. I mean, yeah. every outrageous thing we want to do, let's try this one. It's just a giddy experience. Adam, tell me about your favorite film from the series and your favorite moments from the series.
Oh boy, I've been trying so hard to just hold my tongue through this whole conversation. I totally.
Be careful, Adam. I will cut your section out of the documentary. Be careful. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I will say, you know, Temple of Doom just has some of the best action sequences of the series. But when I think it comes to character and story and a genuine sense of adventure, there's no topping Raiders. I think it's just an absolute classic. And maybe it's generational, too. I have a few years on Brandon. I hate to say it, but I was 8 when I saw Raiders in the theater, and I had never seen anything like it before. And just you have to understand the reaction of the audience while watching that movie was just so extraordinary. Like when the Jeep went over the cliff, everyone was like, "Oh,
yeah!"
You'd never seen it on that kind of scale before. But and it's ironic because when I first saw the film, I saw it reluctantly. You know, there was another movie out at the time, and I tell the story often, and it always makes everyone laugh. There was another movie called Legend of the Lone Ranger.
That's all right.
And it was a big budget action adventure film. You know, and I can't remember who played the Lone Ranger, but
Clinton
his voice was dubbed.
Right. I don't think anyone can.
Spilsbury or something. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Clinton.
But it was a huge bomb. But I wanted to see it, and my friend Peter Murphy, in Simsbury, Connecticut, said, "Well, let's go see this other movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, or something." You know, it has a guy wearing a cowboy hat and he rides a horse, and that's kind of what sold it for me. But you watch the movie; it's just you can't even really select one scene. It's just one classic moment after another.
It really is.
My particular favorite, I love the Well of the Soul sequence. I hate snakes. Snakes and spiders, just, you know, rats I can deal with, no problem. Bugs, okay, not so much, but snakes and spiders, forget it. And that movie had both of those.
Yeah.
But the Well of the Soul sequence when, you know, they're facing certain death and still find quality time to bitch at each other, like an old married couple.
Yeah.
You know, and then when Karen Allen says, "Indy, the torch is going out," you know, when I was a kid, I was just on the edge of my seat, and my life.
That is a great, like we've spoken to before, just a great throwback relationship between the two of them. It's just wonderful.
Just Karen Allen's return, I have to say, that's just making Indy 4 such, you know, I'm already liking it, I think. I'm just so, she's such a great character. And she's really, you know, in Raiders, a very short amount of screen time. It's not like until like about 20 minutes into the movie, 25 minutes that she's actually introduced, then she's out for long stretches of time.
Right.
But she did so much with that character, and apparently she fought for that character, too.
She really did, and, you know, it gives you a sense that this is a full circle movie, this fourth one. I think that's a great approach.
I think that the series is needed, too, you know.
Yeah.
I loved Last Crusade. I love the father-son relationship, but I was sorry that Marion was never addressed again. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch, I want to hear from you what the same thing, your favorite of the trilogy and your favorite moments from the trilogy.
Oh, boy. Just listening to you guys brings back so much memory. And I have to agree with Adam. It is a generational thing because I'll get to that in a second, but I have noticed that there are certain to be divisions along which favorite film goes with which generation of viewer there is. But to go back to your original question, I saw Raiders at a sneak preview before it opened on June 12th. It was with a film with Richard Pryor called Busting Loose.
Oh, yeah.
Rated R. It was a Friday night, and I begged my grandmother to take me because my mom had to work, and she dropped us off, and we went to this thing called Raiders of the Lost Ark. And at the time, I thought it was going to be one of these cheesy documentaries that used to come out from Sun Films, and I thought it was going to be something like The Real Noah's Ark is on Mount Ararat or something like that. You know, The Lincoln Conspiracy starring Fred Grandy from The Love Boat. And you went in to see this, and it wasn't Clinton Spilsbury's The Lone Ranger, by the way, that made me want to see this. It's because, well, heck, it's got Han Solo in it. But we didn't know what was going on. And just like you said, the lights went out. The audience held their breath. We didn't know where we were. We didn't know what was going on. Why did the Paramount movie logo just fade into a real mountain? Who's this guy with the hat? And the second that whip cracked and he snapped the gun out of the hand, the whole theater, and this is when they had big theaters and stereo surround sound, everyone jumped. And we didn't know who he was. We didn't know who Indiana Jones was, but everyone knew, like, this must be the hero. And everybody was along for the ride. And when he came running out at the end with the natives chasing him, and when he jumped onto the vine and you heard the first time the Raiders theme, suddenly everybody was on his team, and the whole place erupted in applause. Like, they don't do anymore. They used to applaud when Rocky won.
Yeah.
They used to applaud when the Death Star. I know it's a two-dimensional screen and the actors can't hear you. It's not a Broadway play. But people used to clap like no tomorrow at these movies.
I miss that.
And, oh, God, I miss that every time I go to a show and say, you're supposed to clap now, you know, folks. And they cheered for Indiana Jones, and my grandmother, God rest her soul, was terrified of snakes. And
yeah.
I still have the claw marks in my arm after all these years for when she started screaming in Italian when she saw The Well of the Souls and booked out of the theater. And I was only 12 or 13. I was like, I can't leave. I got to see what happens.
Yeah.
He showed up about a half hour later when the sub chase was coming on. I'm like, you missed it. So I dragged her 13 more times that summer to see it. But
you know what else I think is great? And rewatching the Raiders again on this new DVD the other night, it struck me. Spielberg's right. This is one of those iconic characters that you just see the silhouette of him and
you know
exactly who it is. And that's why it's so apropos that opening shot of that first trailer for this new one, that's how he's introduced. And there was an exceptional shot in Raiders where he first walks into the bar.
Oh, the
bar.
Yeah,
and see Mary.
Oh, yeah, it's a great shot.
And his shadow's looming over her. You know, it's good both metaphorically and it's just a great aesthetic shot, too. It's a wonderful filmmaking. Harrison Ford.
Yeah. I've actually got a friend, Ryder. If he's listening, he needs to call in and do his Harrison Ford. It's amazing.
Got a good one. Tell me about your favorite of the trilogy and favorite moments that stick out for you, buddy.
Well, you know, they're all great. I mean, the first one is just – I really like the first Raiders, you know, but they're all great. But the first Raiders is just part of that period of Spielberg's filmmaking when – you know, you had Jaws, Close Encounters, and Raiders, and always put those three together.
Yeah.
You just had something really, really cool going on there. It was realistic, but then fantastic at the same time. It was just pure movie escapism. You know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You have like a normal guy, that's just a professor. You know.
Yeah.
Who goes off and does all these great things. You know, Roy Neary in Close Encounters, just an electrician who ends up going to space, you know.
Right.
All that good stuff. So, first Raiders is incredible. And, I mean, but the standout thing to me as a musician is the music. I mean, John Williams, the Raiders of the Lost Ark score.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually all the scores, for that matter. But the first Raiders, that score is pitch perfect. I mean, when do you hear a bad note in a John Williams score? Well, you're not going to find one in the Raiders of the Lost Ark soundtrack.
And I'm definitely going to ask you about your approach to, you know, because you have a job where you have to kind of emulate the score but not replicate the score.
Right.
So I want to ask you a little bit later about that challenge. But Brandon, tell me about Indie Fans. Tell me how this project came to be.
Oh, man. Indie Fans started out way before they even ever announced Crystal Skull was going to happen, and I had wanted to do it as kind of a mockumentary type of thing, and if you look back, our original trailer showed me getting dressed and, you know, very dramatic Batman type of style of getting dressed up as Indy, and then ended ultimately with my girlfriend yelling at me to take out the trash. Which I then did fully dressed as Indiana Jones. So that was the style of what I had originally thought of doing, but then they greenlit Crystal Skull, and then I kind of took a step back and looked at it and went, well, maybe there's more to do. And then just as a fan, I thought, hey, you know what? I want to go to New Haven and watch some film. That'd be fun, you know, that'd be kind of cool because it's indie, and why not? So we did that, and then when we got there, it kind of snowballed in, and a lot of people had stories, and we got back from that and went to Comic-Con in San Diego, and then we kind of took a step back and looked at it, and we really had some great footage and great stories, and a couple stories that Mitch gave us in New Haven are really great and really set the tone for the whole documentary. And it really just, we all sat back and looked at it and said, we've got something really, you know, more serious and a little more legitimate than just some silly YouTube podcast documentary. You know, let's really make something good. So it really just snowballed on and on and on. And then we started getting talent from the, you know, the original trilogy. We interviewed Deborah Nadulman and Vic Armstrong and Tony Baxter and Tim Kirk and a lot of the Imagineers that created the Indie Ride to Disney and a lot of people that, you know, Lucas and the bigger documentaries usually don't get but are still as equally as important in the world of Indiana Jones, you know, nowadays that have continued to carry on the legacy. So it really just snowballed more than anything and really become what it is today.
So what has, is this still a work in progress? Are you still working on it, or is it completely?
I was editing up to about an hour ago, and then got ready for our conversation now. But yeah, we're still shooting, we're still filming. I've been doing new edits every night, adding more stuff. What we showed at Newport Beach was only an hour long, and the reason for that was at Comic-Con, one of the PR guys for the Newport Beach Film Festival ran up to us and said, "Hey, we have to show your movie." And I said, well, okay, but I'll let you know a little secret. There is no movie. You know, I mean, Comic-Con was the second thing we had shot, so we weren't anywhere near having a film done. And they said, no, but we really want to see it. And this went on for a few months, and we had originally planned on doing a Indiana Jones Day, and we thought it would be really cool to show Raiders, Temple, Last Crusade one day in Newport, you know, do a Q&As and get some talent. You know, it would be really cool. And the with that was that we would chime in and edit it with some segments of indie fans in between each film. And then Paramount said, we don't really want to show the original three before Crystal Skull comes out. So we went, okay, well, they went that idea. So then I said, well, let me do some work. Let me get on this and see what I can come up with for you, and maybe I can, you know, pull something together. So it came down where I said, all right, I can get you an hour. Let's go with that. So we said, okay, we'll do that. And so we showed a very condensed greatest moments, leave you wanting more, drive you crazy, everybody. And everybody did. After the show, everybody was like, when can we see the rest? What else is in there? What more do you have? On and on and on. Like we showed, you know, a minute and a half of whip cracking with Harrison's bullwhip trainer from Crystal Skull. Mm. And everybody's going, I want to see more of that. I'm like, no, you can't right now. I'm sorry. You know, we showed 3 minutes of Vic Armstrong and his wife, Wendy, when I've got, you know, 3 hours of that. You know, so there's definitely a lot more that'll be in there. And I've been working on it, and it's really cool, because, yeah, it was tough for me to sit at Newport and watch it and go, oh, they didn't see that scene when he's explaining, oh, well, they'll see it, don't worry. But there's a lot of good stuff that no one's seen yet. And there's a lot of stuff in the film that no one's ever seen in 27, 28 years of this franchise. Deborah found a book for us. It's her original research book. Mm-hmm. And she just found it and pulled it out for us and showed it to us. And, I mean, there's stuff in there that nobody's ever seen. And as far as I know, she took it to the Smithsonian and donated it there right after we did our interview. So we've got it on film, and you know, she's got Polaroids in there of Karen Allen in the white dress, but the white dress wasn't the white dress. It had black in it. You know, I never knew that. You know, and little things like that. And it's really fun to watch, and I think everybody's really going to get a kick out of it.
So when are you anticipating completion of the project?
We've got a couple of distribution places looking right now, and we're filming, obviously, this Saturday. We've actually reassembled just about the entire creative team from that created the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland, all of the original guys, and they're coming in, and we're going to do a big round table discussion, so that'll be really, really cool. And then we're shooting Crystal Skull, we're shooting, you know, reactions and stuff like that. And after that, you know, I've only got maybe 3 or 4 more little interviews to do, and then I'm pretty much set, but ultimately it'll be up to distribution, but I can guarantee you it'll most likely just be whenever Crystal Skull comes out on DVD. It'll be ours sitting right there on the shelf next to it, hopefully.
Well, I know that watching, because obviously we were, when we first met Michael, we met him through The Shark Is Still Working, which is the fan documentary about Jaws. You know, another Spielberg, you know, this man.
Yeah, and that's
cannot live.
fantastic documentary. So.
Oh, absolutely. It's very awesome. Much is. And so, Brandon, I know that through that I found out that many people went into that line of work.
It is, yeah, and Eric and I, Eric who directed The Shark, he and I have had that conversation, that there really is a new style of filmmaking that is. It's fans who are, you know, impacted by a film and want to be part of that world somehow, and this is really, you know, our only way to really get in there and do it. And, yeah, there's The Shark is still working, there's The Psycho Legacy, there's Beware the Moon, which is American Werewolf in London, Indie Fans. I just caught one at the Newport Beach Film Festival, which was the William Castle documentary, Spine Tingler.
We interviewed that filmmaker the other night.
I saw that on your website. But yeah, it really is a new form of filmmaking, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a blast. It makes, you know, I get to goof off and go buy toys and go visit indie locations and write it off as work. So what more do you want out of that?
But I'm curious. Jamie? Yeah, buddy.
Hey, it's Mike. I just wanted to interject. You know, we're talking about all these fan films and these. You know, these really are started on the grassroots level, and anyone out there that's listening that may have an interest in these, really, it would be great if they could help get behind these, the fans, you know, get behind the fan filmmakers to make these things happen and help them get out.
That's what we're all about, man.
I think Shark is still working, needs that. Indie Fans will need that. And, I just wanted to interject that. It's hard to get these things out.
What my question was, though, I didn't know, has anyone ever heard of anyone actually going into archaeology being inspired by the Indiana Jones character?
Oh, God, yes.
I know a lot of people, actually, Jamie, that have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took archaeology class all through college, and a good friend of mine took archaeology with me, and we did digs, and he is an archaeologist now. He's out in the middle of Arizona or New Mexico somewhere. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years doing a really, really big dig. And while we were in New Haven, we interviewed a lot of people at Yale, specifically out of the archaeology department. And one of the guys said, you know, he goes, when I was little, there were three things I wanted to do. And one was an oceanographer because I saw Jaws. One was a paleontologist because of Jurassic Park. And one was an archaeologist because of Raiders.
There we go.
And he goes, yeah, I became an archaeologist because of that movie. And we even ran into a little kid, probably 7 or 8, on the street corner. And I had one of my Indiana Jones T-shirts on. He saw it and, Mom, look, Indiana Jones. And we started talking. And he goes, yeah, my dad's an archaeologist. And he doesn't carry a whip, you know. And he went in to tell us about his dad. And he goes, yeah, no, I've been on digs, and it's really, the paths are kind of tough. It's hard to take a stroller, you know, on these paths, because he had a little brother. And it was just hilarious. But, you know, it's this little kid, and I said, well, are you going to become an archaeologist? He goes, yeah, I think so. That looks like fun. Yeah, I think I will. And, you know, but, I mean, he knew it because of Indiana Jones. And, I mean, and I think even in a couple of days, the History Channel is doing a documentary that's getting ready to run called Indiana Jones and the Ultimate Quest or something like that. And it's about specifically about the impact that Indy has had on the field of archaeology and history and just what it's done for, you know, scholars today. So, yeah, it's definitely left an impact. I know that.
Well, Mitch and Adam, I want to close with you, but let me go to Michael first real quick to ask him about the music. Tell me about the process that you're going through now, because I know you're working your tail off to compose some ideas for this film. Tell me about that process, Michael.
Well, up to now, it's been a lot of we've been just trying to get some temporary music in for the initial screenings, and I believe there's a screening coming up in there, Brandon.
Yeah, we're showing it on the 21st at the Big Newport Theater in Newport Beach. It's either the biggest or the second biggest screen this side of the Mississippi. It's 1,200 seats, Dolby surround speaker every 8 feet. It's just unbelievable. But we're putting up a huge screen, a huge, like, outdoor drive-in type screen, and we're going to show Indie Fans like an hour or so before everybody gets ready to go inside to watch Crystal Skull. So it should be a lot of fun.
So I think people can go to indiefansfilm.com and look into tickets for that. But, you know, right now, Brandon's still doing a lot of filming, but I'm trying to build, I do everything with the synthesizers and things like that, so I'm building templates that try to resemble the London Symphony Orchestra, which is interesting.
There's no challenge there, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of harmonicas and some spoons.
But, you know, I actually, you know, with The Shark is still working, and thanks to Eric Hollander giving me that opportunity, you know, I've been able to explore John Williams a little bit as far as his music goes, and I don't know, I think I've got some good stuff prepared, and I don't want to do anything that, I talked to Eric about this on The Shark, is you ever watch, like, some of these documentaries on TV, and the music's just like for Jaws, it'd be dun-dun-dun.
It's the exact,
come on. I don't want to do anything like that. I want to give these things a score that they deserve. I mean, it's in tribute of the whole thing about Raiders and Indiana Jones, which is the music's a big part of that. And if you just put something hokey in there, I think it takes away from the production value. So I'm going to go out on this.
So it's just about capturing the spirit. I mean, that's what it all comes down to at the end. Mitch and Adam, I want to close with you guys. Tell me why you think, what the main reasons are that these series of films still thrive after 27 years. What is it about them? Starting with you, Mitch.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Well, I was in New Haven last year, and here it is, my hometown. I grew up here, and Adam's from Connecticut as well, but there's something about all these other movies came to Connecticut last year, different types of movies, but the Indiana Jones coming to New Haven to see people, like I said, from 50, 60 years old, 40 years old, like my age, 40, I'm old, 30, 20, everybody's showing up.
That's
lying
not old.
Stop. Ah, come on. All right. But anyway, I remember the Ark when it was brand new, but it was with Moses. I said, hey, watch out. Don't go over there. Don't go in the well. Oh, a lot of snakes. So let me tell you, it's just something, it's magical. I mean, because I think Harrison Ford is timeless. He's the everyman hero. Everybody wishes they could be him. He's not Superman. He's not James Bond. He looks like a smart guy who's determined. He can get out of any situation. And when he showed up in costume, and, I mean, you got an energy. The whole crowd was buzzing. Everybody was excited. There he was. He gave a wave to the crowd. He got on the motorcycle. We watched him do his stunts up and down College Street in New Haven again and again for hours. Everyone had these giant grins on their face. It was almost like Santa Claus was back in town or something like that. And all you heard parents telling their kids is, you don't know who Indiana Jones is? Because the little kids were 7 and 8, and they were like, who is this guy? We're going to go watch those movies. We're going to go rent them today. We're going to rent them. And they were so excited to see this character back. It's almost like movies went on hold in 1989, and they suddenly woke up again. And
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, it's not the recycle. It's not the mummy or something else. This is the real deal. He's here. He's now. He's got his whip. We're going back to the movies, kids.
Adam, tell me why you think the series has thrived and what your hopes are for the fourth one, what you're most excited about.
Well, first, I think Indiana Jones is actually better than Santa Claus.
but Santa comes back
really,
every year.
Yeah, exactly. I think it really, you know, with Raiders in particular, it's really just all about quality filmmaking. I mean, I was kind of stunned to learn today that, you know, Vertigo is 50 years old. And you look at another
Yeah, that's right.
North by Northwest, which is another one of the all-time great entertainments and so funny and exciting and witty. It still holds up. And you know, whatever technical limitations there might have been, you know, I think Raiders is better without CGI.
Yeah.
It's still horror because it's a good film. It's exciting. And Indiana Jones, I think the appeal of him is because he is the fallible hero.
Yeah.
And, like, when you first see him, he looks like the toughest guy on Earth. And then, you know, flash forward, you know, 15 minutes and, oh, he's a nerd.
He's afraid of things.
So everybody can identify with him. I think my hopes for the fourth film is that it is able to stand on its own while at the same time honoring the films before it.
Yeah.
And that it tries to do something new with the character, tries to make the character grow. And, you know, maybe even, you know, hopefully, especially with Karen Allen's return, you know, bring it full circle.
Yeah.
So, and
well,
it's also fun.
Guys, we can't thank you enough for joining us and sharing this kind of magical evening with us, because it is magic talking about these movies. And they can find information about your film at IndieFans.com, correct?
IndieFansFilm.com.
Okay.
Or the way of the MySpace, which is just, you know, MySpace.com/IndieFans. But either one will keep you pretty up to speed.
Yeah, and don't forget, I throw a plug in for you now and then on the Raider.net, too.
That is true.
Like every day.
Mitch and I keep that front page pretty jam-packed, I'll tell you.
It's like, hey, Brandon said this, Brandon said that. I was like, okay, is there anybody else? No. What about Spielberg and Lucas? Ah, forget those guys. This is the new wave of technology coming.
Somebody's got to report all this stuff, right?
Yeah,
and I just want to make sure that our fans out there keep close tabs on this project, because our chat room's buzzing. They're really excited about this project now that they're hearing about it. And just on a personal note, Michael, thank you so much for providing us with our opening theme music for our
it's
special
beautiful.
Show tonight.
It's wonderful.
And our theme music every night.
Well, hey, I appreciate, you know, it's a great thing, and
we really love it. It's great
stuff. I'm so proud of it. What I was saying earlier, these things are very special. The Sharks are working, indie fans, and I think if everybody's just spread the word about these projects, it's just great. So
it's gonna happen, man. Guys, we appreciate you participating so much in tonight's show, and
thank you so much.
Us posted,
thank you very
please.
Much.
Definitely,
thank you,
definitely.
Thank
All right, good night, guys.
Good night.
Thanks
so much. Right. Appreciate it.
Brendan Klayla, Adam McDaniel, Mitch Halleck, and our very own show composer, Mr. Michael McCormick, on the line with us to talk about their new documentary, Indie Fans and the Quest for Fortune and Glory. Great project. Our next guest is on the line. I believe it's the next guest because we're awaiting the owner of the Raider.net in another 12 or 13 minutes, so I think that this is our another very special guest that we have on the line right now. I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to read this introduction.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Our next guest is a terrific actor who left an indelible impression in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. His resume is littered with terrific films and performances, including The Last Emperor, Dragon, Nixon, 7 Years in Tibet, The Corruptor, and American Gangster. How's that for a line of films?
That's awesome.
We're absolutely thrilled to have him on the show tonight, so we can relive our giddy memories of this Indiana Jones classic and get an insider's perspective on how that magic came to be. It is a pleasure to welcome to Movie Geeks United, Mr. Rick Young. Let me bring him up here. Mr. Young, are you with us? Okay, it's not that line. I think it's this
interview.
One.
And I'm really honored to be in this show. Because, I mean, how lucky can I get when I first outing in a big movie and it was Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and Harrison Ford? It was one of the greatest thrills of my life. And
it brought me
here to America at the end of it.
I cannot imagine how exciting that was. And first of all, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great
thank
honor
you.
To talk to you. I want to know, do you recall the first time you saw the first film, Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes, I do, yes.
That was
a screening. I come from London, and there was a screening in London, and I saw it with, and my friends were all begging me to take them along to see it. So I managed to get them all in, and we had a great time.
Oh, I bet. And so tell me how this opportunity came about for you. Was it an audition process, or when did you first hear
about it?
Yes, it
was an audition process. Yes, I went in, and my agent told me to go in and meet with the casting director. And I went in there, and I was very scruffy, and I had long hair. And she took one look at me, and she said, you know, if you want to get this role, she said, go back. Cut your hair, look smart, and come back and meet Steven Spielberg.
Oh.
So I went back and I had a buzz cut, and I came back the next day looking, you know, like the part. And she said, look very, very stern. Don't even laugh. And I walked in there, and Steven and George Lucas had just got off the plane in London, and they came straight to the studio. And I met them there. And I was looking very determined and very angry. And I think they didn't know what I was doing. And but I got the part. I got the part.
You did something good, then. I would bet, though, inside you had to have been just amazed and almost terrified. I mean, you're standing in front of the two giants of cinema. What was that feeling like?
Well, you know, at the time, you know, one was young, and I knew my friends were more enthused than I was, in the sense that they said, "My God, you're going to be working with this amazing people, you know, doing an indie film." And of course, I was so wrapped up with it that I just didn't sort of think about it. But really, now that I think back on it, and I think it was just so amazing what happened,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So tell our audience, anyone that might not know, the role that you play. I mean, you're an integral part in that first sequence.
Yes, I played Cao Kan, who
yeah.
was this sort of smart-ass, tough gangster son. And he was the one who kept shooting with a Tommy gun at Indy. And it was fantastic working to start with Steven, because every day he came in and we would all go and look at the storyboard, and he had things written all up. And each day the you would shoot, and then he encouraged actors to bring in business, all sorts of business. And then he would start shooting all the things that you bring in. And so he would keep expanding. You never knew each day what the filming was going to be, because he kept changing everything each day. As you bring in, he build a story from it. He build in little bits of your character as you bring in things to do. And as a result, I was so excited about doing this, doing that, and I started, you know, bringing in things, and he liked it, and we were shooting all kinds of things, and finally, you know, he got so he enlarged the part so part that he actually brought me to California to do the ending of the version, which wasn't in the script about, you know, chasing Indy down the street in the car, and then he got off. He went, you know, left us in at the airport.
Oh, so that whole chase that happened after they escaped from the club was not in the original script.
No, it was not. It was not. I don't know whether it was. We never had a chance to look at the script. We were given pages of it every day. What we were going to do the next day. But the thing is that I was never told that we were going to be shooting that and coming to California to do that sequence.
Yeah.
So it was a total surprise when we finished, and then he said, "Oh, there's going to be a bit more we're going to do when you get to California." And that's when I heard that I was coming here.
You know, it strikes me that you say that he encouraged everyone to bring with them little bits of business, because the one thing that I'm awestricken by when I watch Spielberg's films is how he fills the frame with such vivid activity. I mean, his frames are always so alive.
Yes, especially in that sequence we did, because it was the nightclub scene. There were about 40 dancers in the Barclay scene, the sequence.
Yeah.
And then there were all the crowds and so on, but he was just amazing. The way he would set the camera up in about 10 minutes, he would get a new angle to a shot. He just kind of, you know, wave his arm this way and that way, and he'd get the lights all done in literally minutes. It was amazing. I mean, he's the fastest scene changer in that I've ever worked with for a director. Most of them take, you know, hours to get ready, you know.
He really does think fast on his feet, doesn't he?
Very, very fast, yes. He's the fastest director that I've ever worked for.
So tell me how long you shot that scene for. I mean, it's the opening 10 minutes or so of the film. How long did that shoot last for you?
We shot in London for about 3 weeks.
Mm.
And first and foremost, we were going to start shooting, and what happened was that Harrison had an accident, and he put his back out, I think, and
yeah.
He had to fly back and go to the doctors, and we were later for about 3 months while he was getting, you know.
He really got
well,
beat up on that one. Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, and then when he was ready, we started shooting again, and that's when we shot about 3 weeks. And after we finished that sequence, That's when I was told that, you know, about a month later, I came to continue finishing the ending of it.
Yeah. Well, you've worked with some extraordinary people, and I'm going to ask you about a couple of other projects outside of Indiana Jones, but tell me about acting across from Harrison Ford in that kind of iconic role.
Well, Harrison was amazing he was one of the humblest movie stars that I've ever worked with. To start with, the first day when I arrived, I was asked to go into the makeup room, and I saw someone sitting having his makeup done in the next chair, and I was told to sit down next to, and then I was introduced, said, "This is Harrison," and I met him, and I was introduced to him. I was so surprised, because always when you work in a movie, the star usually has their own private dressing room, you know, a makeup room. They don't sort of mix with everyone else. But Harrison didn't. He just, you know, was in this communal makeup room with all the other actors. And when we started shooting, he would always say to me, he'll come back from the dailies, he'll say to me, "This went very well, and that went very well," and he was very excited about it. But the wonderful thing was that there was the sequence where, before the big fight, he had to leap up across the table and punch me in the face, and I had to fall backwards. And the camera was behind me, but we had, where as his fist came towards my face, and I had to look up and tilt my head and fall backwards so the camera could see the hit. And he rehearsed me over and over again until it was absolutely right. He wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be hurt. And he said, you know, he just went on and on doing it. And finally, we shot it, and it all went well, and he was very excited about it. And that was amazing for a star to take that responsibility for a young, unknown actor, you know. That was really great, and I'm just so grateful that I've had that opportunity to share with him.
Oh, so you got to tell me, this is a big treat for me to be able to talk to you, because Temple of Doom, more than any other film, it makes me giddy for my childhood. You know, it's just a special movie in my heart. I got to know, what were your impressions when you first watched it on the big screen?
Oh, I mean, like everyone else, it was just, you know, I mean, it was just mind-blowing. I mean, it was just so amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, fantastic, you know. And, of course, I had seen all the sets and so on of the India and all that on at the studio, you know. And watch them shoot as well, and so I sort of really, you know, it was my first sort of big outing in an international Hollywood film. So I was really excited about being able to be a part of it and to be able to see all the other actors working and so on. You know?
Yeah, and it's one of those movies where it's the kind of movie that people say they don't make those movies anymore. They don't make them like they used to, but, you know, they, thank goodness there's another one just around the corner. But, you know, they're still making those kinds of movies. It's awesome. You've worked with some
exceptional... Well, I'm just very grateful that I have been a part of that history. And, it's just amazing that now, after all this time, you know, it's back again with number four. And I'm just so grateful that I was a part of it, you know.
I know you've been in so many films. Do you find that you get recognized most from Indiana Jones?
Because I think one of the things is with Indiana Jones, it's forever on the screen. It's always, I think, everywhere I go, you know, every few months it's showing somewhere, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So people sort of recognize me from that.
Outside of Indiana Jones, I'd love to hear about, you worked with Denzel Washington with American Gangster, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
You know, I mean, I really feel very, very honored and lucky, because I've worked with some of the greatest directors and stars in this business, you know.
Mm.
And that doesn't happen to a lot of actors. Because you can do a lot of films, but you don't get to work with the greats, you know. But I was very, very lucky. I mean, you know, working with, like, on Last Emperor with Bernardo Bertolucci, and and you know, with Oliver Stone and Nixon.
Oliver Stone,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, I just am so. I mean, and when I look back and I said, it just is just amazing. And of course, working with Denzel happened was that I just had I got a call and from Ridley Scott's office, and he said that obviously he had seen me in something, or he knows my work. He just said, you know, would you like to be in American Gangster and do a scene with Denzel Washington? I said, would I? Of course I would do anything, you know, to be in a scene with him. So that's how I got in.
Wow.
I didn't have to audition or anything. He just called me up and said, you know, I'd like you to be in it.
Well, you've had so many fantastic experiences, and really, outside of an Indiana Jones tribute show, which is what this is, we would love to welcome you back to talk about your entire career. But we relish that opportunity. But I wanted to close. I know that you've directed a short film, haven't you?
That's right. Yes. You see, I finally decided that, you know how you have a dream sort of project of your own. You know, every actor has one. And I've been writing with my co-partner, who lives on the West Coast, in fact, or East Coast, and we write online, and we've written other scripts and so on, and we finally decided that we would write one and we would develop it and shoot it, a small film, and we shot a film about a Chinese rabbi.
Hmm.
Go figure
it was, that. Well, yeah. that's interesting. And what's the title of this film?
The title of this film is Oy Vey, and it's about a Chinese rabbi who comes to America, and his name is Benjamin Gold, and he comes to a small town, and he runs a little synagogue there, and people say, how come he has a name of Benjamin Gold? And he actually came from Israel, and say, how come he's from Israel, you know? So we get to find out about his background, and actually there is a community in a city in China called Kaifeng, which goes back over 1,000 years, and they were the Chinese. They were all Chinese Jews that goes back to the seventh century. And he belongs to that tribe there, the group of people there. And we come to learn about the community there. And the funniest thing about this group of Chinese was that for over 700-800 years, they thought they were the only Jews in the world. They didn't know that other people existed outside of it. Because they had no way, there was no communication with Jews outside their little community.
That's incredible.
So let me ask you this. You've mentioned working with Bertolucci and Spielberg and Stone and Ridley Scott. It's just flabbergasting to go through that list of names. But did you find yourself channeling any of them when you embarked on this endeavor, directing your own film?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. No, because, you know, I think every... director, I mean, they are so busy with what they do, you know, in their lives, you know.
Yeah.
And so I hesitate to sort of, you know, intrude on what they're doing.
But what you took from them, did you find that you're taking lessons that you kind of learned from observing them and you're applying them yourself?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yes. I mean, I think learning from the greats is one of the best lessons that you can ever, you know. Have, and I know I learned so much from all these great directors. Yeah.
So is this going around the film festival circuit right now?
Well, I was we had at Fort Lee in New Jersey. We had we entered that festival, and we won the first prize there. And then about a month ago, we were at the Garden State Festival. And it was well received, so we are trying to sort of we showed it. I still want to make the big feature. The idea is to make a big feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to sort of interest someone out there, with the idea of making the feature. I have the story and so on, you know, for the full feature.
Well, when that comes to fruition, please make us your stopping point, because we would love to share your ideas with our listeners, and we are just crazy about the work you've done. And thank you so much for being a part of our lives through this amazing work that you've done.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
You're welcome back
bye
anytime,
bye.
Mr. Young. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Rick Young, co-star of Temple of Doom. That's the coolest, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just incredible.
That is cool. Man, what a roster of people that he's worked with.
I know.
As if Temple of Doom wasn't enough.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a 203 area code that's been up here for a little while now. Let me see if I can unmute it. I don't know if they're still there.
Yeah, I'm most enjoying the show, fellas.
203? Hi,
yeah,
how you doing, man?
It's me. It's Mitch from Connecticut. I'm just enjoying the show and having a great time.
Oh, thank
time.
You, Mitch.
Fantastic, and to hear you folks talk about things that, like, I remember in the twinkle of an eye is just amazing to me.
Well, thank you very much.
It never gets old, and I watch it all the time, and my kids are 8 and 10, and they love it just as much as I did when I was a kid.
Isn't that what's beautiful about this trilogy, though? And it's something you feel safe. It's something you feel absolutely safe showing your children, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what? You think at the time, oh, my God, the Temple of Doom is going to be horrific. But nowadays, I guess kids are just a little anesthetized by the real world. They look at it and they go, you were afraid of that? I go,
that
calls
PG-13 rating?
Yeah. Yeah. PG-13 is not the same as it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Spielberg, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this, Temple of Doom was a PG movie, and really it was Spielberg's urging that the PG-13 rating be implemented.
Yeah.
It was his idea following Temple of Doom.
That and Gremlins, yeah.
So, Mitch, you're just hanging on the line to listen to the show. Are you not able to pick it up on a computer?
No, you know, I've been walking around the house, guys, and I'll be embarrassed to say I was organizing my latest set of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull trading cards as I had the phone on.
Trading cards?
Well, you see, I'm the correspondent for the Raider.net and the IndyCast, so I have to do work. This is field work. I'm organizing my trading cards, fellas.
Where can I pick those up?
What's that?
Where can I pick them up?
The Topps trading cards are available at your local Target and Walmart or your local comic book shop. And
all right, I'm going to have to investigate that this weekend. Thank you.
Absolutely. I've got my son pulled a John Hurt autograph card out. I'm like, yes.
Oh wow. Okay.
I'm like, no, give it back to Dad.
Give it back to Dad. You don't get John Hurt.
No, he pulled out John Reese Davies last time, which is great. I'm like, you're pulling winners here. Go for the Harrison Ford and George Lucas, buddy.
So Mitch, and I see that I think that Brandon's on the southern line here.
Oh, God, my cohort there from Indie Fans, yeah.
Yeah, you both wanted to join in on some of this DVD discussion. Is that correct?
Guys, we could talk about Indiana Jones till the cows come home, so you tell us when to stop talking.
Well, I just
got okay, I'm gonna bring on our DVD correspondent, and we're going to talk for a little while, and then I would love to bring you guys both back in.
Sure.
If you want to call a little bit further into the show, maybe in the next 15 minutes, we'll bring you on in and close out the show with you guys and your thoughts.
Sure. You know what? I can't wait to hear Jawad from the Raider.net, because I've been writing for him for over a year, and I've yet to talk to the man in person.
You know what? He has not called in, and I think it was he thought it was 11 o'clock this morning, first of all, and then I corrected him. I said, no, it's 12 hours from now, and he said, okay, I'll call in. I'll call in 12 hours from now.
It's an interesting world, because the Raider.net, the main, other than myself, the other news writer is Giles, and Giles is in Belgium. I'm in Connecticut, and Jawad is up in Canada. And I thought everybody was in the United States when I was writing for this for 6 months. And then one day we were like, where are you? And we all started figuring out that just like Indiana Jones, we were world weary. We were all around.
You know, that might be it. It might be the middle of the night where he is.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And
far too late.
Ed Dollister from the IndyCast podcast is in Queensland, Australia, which is 16 hours ahead of Connecticut. So that's another story.
So that automatically tells you, I mean, this is a global phenomenon. I mean, this people across the globe are moved by this series to dedicate a good chunk of their lives to it. It's amazing. So, Mitch, I'm going to put you on hold, and
yes,
we're going to
bring
on Aaron.
I've got to go organize some more trading cards here.
Okay, keep me in mind when you're doing that.
I've got a lot of doubles and triples. We'll talk later.
Okay, cool.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye now. Okay, we're bringing on Aaron. We're going to talk about the new DVD. Aaron, how you doing, man?
Hey, fellas. What's up?
Hey.
How we doing?
We're doing good. Actually, this DVD set came out yesterday, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Came out yesterday.
Yeah.
So everyone has So when we're talking about it, everyone can go get it. There's no waiting. There's no waiting in line. They can pick it up whenever.
Walmart's open 24 hours a day. So so go out there as soon as we get done talking about
Indiana
it here on the show.
Jones, get the Indiana Jones Adventure Collection and some ammo.
So let's talk about this, because back in 2003 they came out with a box set. Pretty comprehensive, we thought. And what do we think of this new one as compared to that old one? What do you think?
Well, it's funny. It has its pluses and minuses.
Right.
I guess we'll go through the pluses first, because I want to be positive. The pluses are it is well packaged, and one thing that should be noted is that this is the first time that they are being offered individually or in this collection, because I don't know if you remember that
right.
First box set 5 years ago was a box set, and that was it. There was no separate, buy them separately. It was a box set, and I think it was four discs. It was the three films and one disc with all the features. So now it's the three films in this box or separately, and they all have their own individual features on the disc. So that's one benefit, I'm sure, for a lot of people. The other, another thing to note, which I have read online, is that the sound is actually a slight improvement over the original series. And I guess in the 5 years since, they've been able to tweak the sound, and it has a fuller, more balanced orchestration.
Yeah, it's got a new kind of THX intro, too, that I haven't seen before. That must have been created. Yeah.
Just to get off on a tangent, I actually love this new THX intro. I was really I love any THX intro, because I just love that whole the intro of THX. But I think we all can agree that the original THX is still the best intro. Can we? The original with the
Aaron, I don't lose sleep over it. So yeah, either way,
I used to really get it. It's funny, in theaters you don't get the THX promo anymore. I used to love it back in like 94 when you would get the THX promo. Or my other favorite was the I don't know if y'all remember the Dolby Digital one with the train.
I still see that from time to time.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I ran a movie theater, so I saw all of that. But this actually has a brand new THX that I haven't seen before, and each disc opens up with the first trailer to Crystal Skull, and then you go into the menu board, and let's talk about the extras that are available here that weren't available on the first go around in 2003.
That is another plus, in that none of the extras are duplicates from that original box. So these are all new extras. So there's no double dipping in extras. And each film has their own set. I think the highlight we'll take it film at a time. The highlight of the Raiders special features is the breakdown of the face melting sequence. To me, that was the highlight of those extras on that one. And they really go down, they really break down what that one effect that everyone always talks about, the face melting of Tote, on what went into that and how it was a combination of makeup and stop motion and slow motion and camera speed to really get that, and also of early ILM approaches to effects. So that extra was very exciting. On the Temple of Doom one, I think the one there that I really liked was the actual locations, which actually encompassed all three of the locations of each one of each film, and I think that was very good. And also there was a fun extra on the history of, I guess you could say, bugs, rats, and snakes throughout the film.
That is enjoyable, and they're not. That is enjoyable, and anyone that gets the creepy crawlies during those scenes, I mean, that's what they're designed to inspire in you. This is like a 10-minute featurette of nothing but creepy crawlies. And personally, I have no problem with snakes. Spiders was my big thing. So when he was covered in spiders, Alfred Molina, in that opening of Raiders, I remember just losing it in 81 as a little kid, because I still can't see a spider. I get scared if a spider's on my wall.
I think there was a blown opportunity for a Temple of Doom featurette on just the breakdown of the food at the dinner scene. I think that would have been
right.
What was in all of that? Particularly, I always as a kid wanted to know what was the guy eating when he had the monkey brains.
Yeah, it really is like a kid gross out movie. Typically,
yeah, it is.
So that's what I find so charming about it, especially this last time watching it through. And how about Last Crusade? The extras there. What strikes you on that one?
The extras on Last Crusade. The other thing, well, obviously the big one there is where we get this. It was filmed, I think, 2 years ago, and they saved it. Was this this kind of reunion of the indie women.
At the American Film Institute, right?
At the American Film Institute of the indie women, and that was very that was interesting. Obviously, fan favorite is obviously Karen Allen, so she got the bulk of the microphone. But I must say, and I think you would agree, Jamie, is that my favorite has always been Kate Capshaw, for the reasons that fans didn't like her, in that she was annoying and she was shrill. And to me, that was very funny. Spielberg is very accurate when he says she was very Carol Lombard-ish, you know, very Carol Lombard, you know, diva caught in the wilderness. And to me, that was always funny. The funniest scenes is when we see her running around that campfire and, you know, Indy and Short Round are playing cards.
Right.
She's just running around with, you know, the bats and snakes. You know, that scene is just a great piece of slapstick.
It's a throwback, you know, and what those movies were intended to be from the beginning. And I think we're living in such, and I guess this was prevalent in 84 as well, living in such kind of politically correct times that offended a lot of people.
It did.
But it really, they all have their sense of humor severed in some way. Because can't you tell it's an affectionate throwback to, and it's actually a lot of women find that to be a wonderful stereotype in terms of entertainment, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's a lovely kind of character, and a transformation that occurs in her during that series is a transformation that isn't apparent in any of the other female characters necessarily.
No, I mean, Karen Allen in the first film is tough as nails from scene one, and that is good because we know when she's in peril, she can take care of herself. And the Allison Duty character, I guess let's say Allison Duty.
Right.
Well, she's an SS bitch. I mean, you know.
You know, that was also intriguing. I know that was kind of, a lot of critics thought that was the weakest part of it, but I did find that was intriguing of this double agent for this movie,
right,
making her a femme fatale. So that was a twist. But the thing about Jamie's right about Kate Capshaw, Willie Scott, she's the one character who truly does go through a 180. By the time she's in prison, you know, by the time she's in that cage and finally saved, she knows how to take care of herself and how to take care of Short Round, and she's rough, you know, she's able to rough it a little more. And so that's also exciting in the film.
Yeah.
I think the other interesting extra on Last Crusade is a breakdown of all the sidekicks that we get from all three films, of be it Sala, who's always been my favorite, of all the films, and my second favorite being Temple of Doom Short Round, who it doesn't get enough credit in that he is a cute kid, but he's not cloying or unctuous. He's just
a
smart kid who happens to be very funny, but not annoyingly so. And
you can believe him as just an extension of Indiana Jones's personality, and he has a very kind of touching backstory that's only related in a sentence between Indiana Jones and Kate Capshaw. But and people talk about Temple of Doom. This is okay, Jerry. This is the part of the show where I'm gonna defend Temple of Doom.
Okay,
get ready. Okay, just one of the many reasons. Short Round. I find his relationship with Indy very touching.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that Temple of Doom is dark and it lacks the heart of the trilogy as a whole. I thought that the relationship between them worked like gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where he's saying, where Indiana Jones changes, you know, to the dark side, you know, which is kind of, it's all in the spirit of that old school 30s, 40s stuff.
Yeah.
Everything in this movie. And when he turns to the dark side in Short Round, it's like, Indy, what's wrong? I love you. You know,
yeah.
And it's so touching. And when he burns him and he says, I'm all right, kid. And it just takes me back to my childhood. I can't say it enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember as a kid, that was one of the, probably the most exhilarating moment, not sequence, but moment, when Indy gives Short Round that wink. That he's okay, and then that's the best music cue. That's when the John Williams score really kicks in, and he dispatches all those guys, and he finally hugs Short Round. That little minute of action and emotion is just one of. I mean, it's a peak in that whole section of the film. It really is. I mean, that encapsulates the humanity of all the indie films.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the indie films, is really in that one minute, two minute sequence, and it's just terrific. I've always said I Spielberg is very sensitive. You know, he's very pragmatic, but he's also very sensitive to reviews. I've always described the 2 year period of Poltergeist, Temple of Doom, and Gremlins as Spielberg's indulging in his Sam Raimi side, which is his gleefully nasty dark side, and that every filmmaker of any talent must go through to get to the other side. You take any great filmmaker and look at their filmography over the years, they have a period of darkness. I mean, you could. If you look at Scorsese, and everyone will say, well, all of Scorsese movies are dark. Well, not necessarily. Taxi Driver is Scorsese's true dark side film. And then after that, he grows a little more and more and more.
At the same time, though, man, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, but people that complain about Temple of Doom being too dark, I think they've missed a lot of the tone of the movie. What surprises me about Spielberg's introduction to Temple of Doom in this new box set is what I said before, where he said, you know, he was a director for hire, basically. He felt like that. And he wanted to bring Lucas's vision to the screen. But it seems like he was totally committed. I mean, from the viewing the movie. I mean, it's deliciously dark in places. But at the same time, it is the most exhilarating of the entire trilogy to me. Is there a better, more giddy action sequence than jumping out of the plane on the raft, going down a ski slope off the cliff into the river rapids? I mean, that's just the start of the second action sequence in the film, the first 20 minutes.
Well, it's funny. Someone did describe the first 15, 20 minutes as basically it's the equivalent of one of those old Buster Keaton two-reelers. And it is. I mean, it's...
Right.
It is that. And it's funny. We talked about this the other day, Jamie, and I don't know if you brought it up with Gary, and that, you know, looking at these films again, and that both Raiders and Last Crusade, I remember, we both said at the time critics were, if they complained or if they had one observation, that they were so breakneck, they didn't let you breathe, come up for air. But looking at Raiders and Last Crusade, they're actually very almost classical now. I mean, what was once considered breakneck, they're actually very classical, in that you compare them to, like, the Pirates films, it's like now those are breakneck. Those are nonstop, where there's actually moments of levity in Raiders and Last Crusade, where Temple of Doom, that's the breakneck one. There's only one sequence in Temple of Doom that is a dip in tempo, and that's the bringing of the fruit and seduction scene. And even that scene has humor and really doesn't. It's a moment of levity, but before you even start to breathe, it picks up again.
Right.
Yeah, like the classic, the dame and the man, the man's man going back and forth. It's placed like a classic romantic comedy exchange.
Right.
That whole scene.
It does.
It's very funny. It's very funny when he's like when he's feeling the wall, the female statue on the wall, trying to find a hiding place because he feels an air vent, and maybe there's a place in here, secret passageway, and grabs the breast, and she's like, I'm right here.
Right.
I mean, the whole scene plays just incredibly joyous to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But I mean, would you agree that, like I said, it is the one that truly is breakneck, while the other two actually now play kind of almost, you know. They have kind of a deliberate pace. There are moments of that interrupt the action.
I think so too. But this is the difference. This is the difference between someone else making Temple of Doom, say Sacrilege, say Michael Bay, as opposed to someone like Spielberg. Michael Bay makes that kind of movie, and it's exhausting. It numbs you. It gives you a headache. Spielberg's genius is in his direction and his framing. It is so clean and so pure that it's not numbing or exhausting. It is exhilarating from start to finish.
He modulates where Michael.
Yes.
He modulates the pace and the tempo of each action sequence, so they're not all the same. Where Michael Bay does not believe in modulating anything; it's full throttle,
right,
beginning to end. Even in the moments where Michael Bay will say, "Well, here I'm giving you a moment to breathe," you're not giving us a moment to breathe because he's still cutting every 2 seconds, you know, back and forth between if it's just two characters talking, you know, Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery are just having a conversation, okay, that'd be great, a moment of levity, but he's too busy cutting back and forth between, you know, their singles that
right.
You're getting exhausted just from hearing them talk. Where Spielberg might just let the master shot run for about 2 minutes and just let it go that way.
Yeah, we're gonna bring it. We're gonna bring our extra callers on the line right now, and then we're gonna close the show. We might go just a little bit over tonight, but we're gonna close the show with a general harmless plot description of the next one, and give you guys a little teaser.
Recommend the box, Jamie? I recommend the box.
I recommend the box just because you'll hate yourself if you don't own it. You know, if you're a fan of Indiana Jones, I mean, there's tons of new stuff on every disc, and so it's worth the, what is it, like $40, the box set?
$40, yeah.
It's worth it just for that. I mean, but that being said, you and I both agree that it's probably coming out on Blu-ray with the fourth edition, with the fourth movie, later this year, possibly Thanksgiving.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, if you're money tight, you know, take that into consideration. But it really is worth it. I mean, for an indie fan, it's hard to say that it's not worth it. You know?
No, yeah. So we both recommend it without qualification. Unless you're investing in Blu-ray anytime soon, then you might want to wait. But if not, if you're still just a DVD person, it's a total investment.
Yeah. Let me take this. I don't recognize this one. This is, maybe I do recognize this one. I have a 203 caller, 203.
Guys, it's just your old friend Mitch again. Just keep going.
Okay.
Okay, cool, Mitch.
Okay, let me do 301. I'm unmuting 301.
Is that me?
That's you, I get, yeah.
Okay, this is Sean again. Jerry, look what your show did to me. You guys started talking about Temple of Doom, brought up all those great, great scenes, and I'm like, oh, how could I say it was the worst movie?
Yeah, how could you?
How could I do that?
You've been hanging out with Steve too much, man, when he worked there.
What,
I mean,
what's wrong with me?
I was thinking the same thing, Sean. But I just met you, so I didn't want to bring that up. But
it's all right. But yeah, no, you guys reminded me. But you know something? What I love about this movie, I won't take long because I know you got a show to finish. There's something about it though. Like I was explaining to him before, is I hesitate to use that word worse because people get the negative connotation, and why wouldn't they? But that's not really what I was meaning. It's the one that I kind of, like, watched less. So that actually helps me because, see, now it is I don't always want to watch Raiders and then watch Last Crusade and wear them out, so to speak, quote-unquote.
Right.
I always have this extra adventure that's still enjoyable. And all that great levity between him and who was it that was speaking? Was his name Aaron?
Oh. Yes.
Yeah. You're talking about the issues with Kate Capshaw. Never had a problem with her because it was a great contrast. They both worked so well. Indy's in the dirt person. Here's Kate Capshaw. She's the high society, and she's trying to get with this guy of the earth, and it's just not going to work the way she wants it to. And that's all fantastic. So it brought a lot of
classic
humor to it.
Classic.
Yeah.
Sean,
all right,
you have great taste in movies, and you're very articulate about them. So, you know, I'm sure Jerry has done it already, but I'd like to invite you on a future show anytime you like.
I've invited him on countless times. I mean,
that's
this is the first
right.
Yeah.
I said, Jerry, well, why don't you guys ever talk about comic books?
Hey, we love comic books. We talk about them. I've invited you on for the last year. Oh, I'm going to call him for the Indiana Jones show. I mean,
that's right.
Well, when we have a special show that we think is up your alley, we will send you an invite, my friend. Okay?
All right. Well, that's fantastic. And listen, guys, you guys are doing a great job, and I enjoy your show.
All right. Thank you, man.
So
thanks,
much.
God.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. I'll see Jerry. I'll see you tomorrow.
You'll probably see me tomorrow. That's right.
All right. Talk to you.
Good
Take
night.
Care.
Jerry, you work out of the gym every day, don't you?
No, not every day. I don't know where you people are reading this stuff, but
man. where we're reading this stuff. It's in the gossip column.
Yeah, I know, right there next to Britney Spears and Hannah Montana. Yeah,
exactly. 615. Is this Brandon by chance?
Hey, no, this is James.
James.
Hey, guys.
James.
Hey. Man, I'm so glad to see so much of the show just kind of coming to the defense of Temple of Doom, and I've been wanting to chime in on it because, I mean, that kind of is the by and large perception of Temple of Doom, is it's the weakest and it's the darkest. But you know what? I'll give you kind of the dark edge of it, but one of the qualities that really offsets that is the fact that Short Round is there at all. I think he's really there to offset that darkness.
Right.
And he's the one that kind of provides a lot of that fun, but the one thing that I really wanted to touch on that's really distinctly unique and a great quality about Temple of Doom as far as the character of Indiana Jones goes, and Aaron already kind of touched on it when he used the word humanity, is Temple of Doom is the only one where you see Indiana Jones as being a compassionate human being. When he finds out about those children, being enslaved and used the way they are, I mean, he's so much more motivated by that than the pursuit of fortune and glory, and you gotta love that in the guy. I mean, when you see him, he's a little bit kind of on the colder side at times, and he's kind of this rough and definitely a man's man. But
that's the thing that makes us love him, though, is his vulnerability. Vulnerability makes us love him, though. In the long run.
Absolutely.
And in the first one, it's expressed by, the snakes. I mean, that's it actually taking punches, which is amazing. He takes punches, he bleeds. That great fight near the airplane in Raiders with that big guy. He always seems to, like, confront a really big guy. And the guy punches him the first time in the face, and his knees wobble, and he falls to the ground. It's like a great comedic take, an old-school take.
Well, he's still somehow able to dig deep and come out on top anyways,
Yeah.
That's what's great about that character.
You watch all that, and you kind of want to say to yourself, maybe I can dig that deep myself, whatever it is that I'm going through. But I'm so glad to see you. Just so many people coming to the defense of Temple of Doom because it is the funnest of the three. What is that?
Can I ask something? When was this film? All right, with the exception maybe when it was first released, I've always felt this film is like grown in stature. Is it really that mocked and reviled?
I don't know. I still see like if you go on Rotten Tomatoes and look at a lot of the original...
James, forget Rotten Tomatoes. No, just to hell with that. I know some of the critics on there, they just need to go, drop dead. But
one thing that needs to be mentioned, though, when you guys talked about the lack of success of Temple of Doom and it being the least successful, I mean, one of the reasons for that is because of the way it was reviewed originally, I have to believe.
It gets better with each viewing, though.
I think it does, too. And I must say, it did get, quote unquote, some mixed reviews or some pan, but there were a number of major critics who gave it unquestionable raves, being obviously Siskel and Ebert. There's a Siskel and Ebert episode on YouTube that basically to coincide with Temple of Doom was about the magic of Spielberg. So there's that rave, the New York Times, obviously, and then, I mean, to me, the biggest validation is that Pauline Kael gave it an out-and-out rave, a truly unqualified rave.
Pauline Kael, who disliked Raiders of the Lost Ark,
said this is what Raiders.
She disliked it.
Yes.
She thought that Raiders of the Lost Ark was a joyless movie, and she thought Temple of Doom was the exact opposite. She really didn't have a bad word to say about Temple of Doom, except that at times John Williams' score was too overbearing. I think that's what I remember. But it's John Williams. It's an action score.
Like a lot of times, these critics go into a theater with a clipboard and a pen. They have their mind on 10 other things while they're who knows.
And someone usually shit in their cereal. So
Thank you, Jerry. You always bring us back to perspective.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, how can you hate Raiders of the Lost Ark? I don't care.
I know, man.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is the most perfect a movie can possibly get, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate you calling in.
Always good to hear from you.
You got it, guys. It's always an honor. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, Mitch, you're still on the line, right?
Yeah, I was just curious your opinion on something that's come up a lot lately. We talk about after May 22nd. What are we going to talk about on May 23rd? Understanding that unless Harrison Ford finds the real-life Fountain of Youth, he's not going to stop aging. What are your thoughts about an animated Indiana Jones a la The Clone Wars that Lucas is doing?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I will defend it in that I think Lucas is smart in that he knows it is not, quote-unquote, a Star Wars film. So that is why he is releasing it in August. He knows that only it, you know, the Star Wars films have an unchecked audience. You know, parents, grandparents, kids, grandkids, they all go to the Star Wars films.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the animated stuff, that is just truly for the diehards who are truly into the mythology. And that does not include grandparents, parents, you know, that doesn't include. So he's fully aware of that, so that's why it's in August.
Yeah.
And he has said that it is a launching pad for the series that's going to start sometime in the fall.
Right, right.
So he
it's more of an opportunity to beat at that horse. But
with
Indiana Jones, do not touch Indiana Jones and make it animated. That's why.
He's not going
to
do that.
I know he's not going to. But I was just thinking, where do you go next? I mean, if you want to see Indiana Jones 5 or 6, realistically,
what they've been saying, and I disagree with this as well, even though I think he's a very charismatic actor, is that it's opening up Shia LaBeouf for his own kind of further adventures.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like let it lie. I mean,
it's enough already. This is with Lucas just going back, as you say, beating a dead horse, milking it for what it's worth, enough.
But that's not, see, that's unfair, Jamie. I mean, Garrett, because...
No, it's not in this sense.
No. Well,
let me just finish here. It goes back with even the young Indiana Jones Chronicles and with the Star Wars prequel trilogies. There has to be a point where you just say enough. Let the audience is not stupid. The audience has a vivid imagination. Let them decide what it is. Let them have in their daydreams, their imaginations. Let me finish. Please. Let them decide why Anakin went to the dark side. Let them decide by how Indiana Jones became Indiana Jones. It is almost as though that Lucas thinks we're retarded in one sense and we don't have an imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So I have now... Aaron and I have been thinking about this for 20 years, okay? So I think it's beating a dead horse. I think it shows an incredible lack of creativity on Mr. Lucas's part.
Well,
at the same time, I think we've proved, and Aaron, I'll give you the last word, but I think we've proven that we don't need any beyond these 4 films.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
these movies aren't going anywhere. I mean, we've proven this tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the people that are touched by this trilogy and they're dropping them to their youth, to their children. This isn't going to end. I mean, this
right.
is going to be a generational thing, I think. Aaron, you get the last word
As far as Lucas with the Star Wars thing, if the way that Lucas will know to stop is if people stop going and they're not hits, then he'll stop. But as far as the Indiana Jones thing and what to do next, you're leaving out a key participant, and that is it's not just Lucas's baby, and that Spielberg is very shrewd about what he is associated with. So Spielberg is not going to allow anything to get diluted. He learned that the hard way with the Jaws sequel.
Right.
Ever since then, he has been very, having his fingers into, that's why he controls the Jurassic Park series and all the other stuff. So he's the only person who basically can tell George Lucas no.
That's right, and that's why we love him.
And so he's going to make, if Lucas has any ideas and a Spielberg gives him his blessing, then they're going to be worthwhile. If not, Luke Spielberg will say, no, you need to stop.
Right.
Yeah, my feeling is that Spielberg... will not. And nothing will go on with Indiana Jones without Spielberg. I mean, it's all about the Spielberg magic. I think we can all agree on that. Okay, let's close out the show. We're going to close it with a little discussion on Crystal Skull, but first I have 2 more callers. 805, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, it's Brandon again.
Oh,
hey,
cool.
Brandon.
I just want to say, go ahead. You're first.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
Please.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying about the cartoon and real quickly about what Aaron just said about Spielberg there. You know, we look at the cartoon,
and I'm looking at it right now. You can order these character keys on the IndianaJonesShop.com, which are basically animation cells. And if we've learned anything from Lucas, they'll throw out a couple things like that. We'll all buy them. We'll hang them on our wall. We'll buy everyone that comes out. And then they go, well, there's a need. Let's do a cartoon. Cartoon's fine with me. I would rather see that any day of the week than Shia as Indy the Third or whatever that is. That to me would be, we have more Star Wars prequel ahead of us, and we all know where that ended up.
Yeah.
And if you look too at the Dark Horse Further Adventures that are coming out, which are drawn in a very comic book, very typical Clone Wars type animation, it looks cool. So I don't know, we'll see. And then the only other thing too with Spielberg that kind of discerns me in a way that, like Aaron said, well, Spielberg says no, that's what happens. However, if that was really the case, I think we would have actually seen Frank Darabont's script rather than another one, because Spielberg, I believe, was quoted in saying it was the best script he'd read since Raiders, but George didn't like it. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's up in the air. But it's a, what was that?
What didn't George like? How could George not like Frank Darabont? That's what I want
to
know.
I go back to that. I'm a huge Frank Darabont fan. I have a Shawshank Redemption poster in my office. I'm looking at it right now with a signed CD, and even across the other wall. Let's look at it right here. Variety framed up on my wall, May 31st, 2002. Frank Darabont's the guy that's going to save the franchise, and it goes on to, he's written this many Young Indie episodes. Every movie he's made is taking place in the 50s.
Yep.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the guy knows what he's talking about, And then especially Steve goes, this is the best script I've read since Raiders. And then the next thing you know, nope, we're going to rewrite it. And you go, what happened,
Even so, I think that the end result in 4 in Crystal Skull, I think you're going to see a great deal of Darabont there.
Oh, sure.
I think so, too.
I think Lucas objected to the Darabont script. I read this on a message board, someone saying that Lucas was a little disturbed by all the Stephen King references. That's what I heard.
Oh, God. Lucas is jealous of Stephen King.
But I think it was Darabont's idea to bring back Marion, for instance.
And he's
taking credit for that on some podcast videos, which crack you up because he makes sure that everybody knows that was his. But I don't know. One day I just pray that we'll all get the chance to read Frank's script because I would just love that opportunity.
Wouldn't that be something, man?
That would be great.
Let me take the 615 area code. 615, go right ahead.
Hey, Jamie, it's Eric. The Johnny from
Hey, Eric.
It's a big reunion tonight.
I know it. Hey, Brandon, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Eric. What's up, buddy?
I kind of waited till the 11th hour here. I was working on a graphic project.
It was because somebody said something bad about Jaws 2, wasn't it? That's the way you called it.
No. I got a chuckle out of that. But as I was listening, there were a couple things. I joined in on phone when they were talking about Temple of Doom and the darkness of it. So I've been on a while. But I've just been enjoying it because I'll tell you, I was going to chime in there, but we're so past that topic at this point. But I've just been enjoying. I mean, a lot of the things that I've been wanting to express, you guys have been doing a marvelous job. So I'm
thank you.
Jaws 2 is underrated. I will say Jaws 2 is underrated.
And that's what we're going to be covering that next month. So yeah.
Okay. Well, Jaws 3.
Yeah. You call me when Jaws 2 is being checked. Oh, hold on.
My only complaint has been eaten. That's my only complaint.
I'll be right there.
Yeah, Eric.
Sorry, James. Sorry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm on Movie Geeks. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Eric.
Sure.
Your feelings about the upcoming one. What you've read in terms of plot, do you think it's where it needs to be?
I'll tell you this much. I hesitate to say this because I said this about Episode 1 before it came out. I said, look, George Lucas, let's be honest, it's his brainchild, it's his baby. In my opinion, they're Spielberg's films, but Indiana Jones is a franchise, that's his whole deal. And I said, Lucas has had a long time to think about this. I can't imagine that the mind that brought together the three Star Wars films is going to blow it after having this long to think about it. I was horribly wrong.
Right.
But there's a big difference. There's a big difference. We have Spielberg at the helm of this thing.
Yeah,
and
you're
I
absolutely
totally
right.
Agree. What you guys said earlier, I completely agree. Spielberg is the only person that has the power to say no to Lucas,
yeah.
And he'll do it.
And he probably did it a number of times on this film.
I'll bet he did. And so here's what I would say. If I were trusting Lucas's judgment on this, I would be saying, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath till I see it. But because I know Spielberg's acumen as a director and I know his integrity and his artistry, I have every faith. I mean, you know, you just look at the trailer is almost enough to just
yeah,
let you go, okay,
exactly.
You know what? But I have every faith in this film. Now, it's a balancing game, but the balance is weighed heavily in Spielberg's favor. So
it always is.
And I think it's going to be probably I'm really hoping, this is the biggest thing I'm hoping for, is that it's a throwback to his original style. I know that, you know, with his new DP and everything that he's been using through the years, it's going to have a slightly different look, but I think it's going to be the closest to classic Spielberg adventure that we've seen in years. And I think so, too.
And this,
I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And this is what they've said. They've said that Janusz Kaminski, I guess that's the way you pronounce his name,
he really
studied the cinematographer of the first three, Douglas, what's his last name? Skolom or...
Slocumby,
isn't it? Yeah. He really studied his style. And so he's emulating that style. It has a real old school feel. I mean, it looks like a retro movie, just like the others.
It does. It definitely has a gritty look. And I'll tell you, this has been one of my minor, and I say minor with a capital M, minor criticisms of Temple of Doom and Last Crusade, is that there was a certain grittiness that Raiders had just in the film stock, and just I don't know what it was. It was the contrast levels or whatever. It had a sort of gritty look that gave it just an earthy feel. The other two got a little more too polished in some scenes for me. I love the films. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I think this is going back to that Raiders look more, and it's surprising if that does turn out to be the case, it'll be a little surprising in the digital age because, you know, I'm sure they're going to rely on digital effects for certain things.
Right.
I know they are, but
yeah.
I think it was done right.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, we're all excited. I mean,
do we want to close the evening? Do we want to? Kind of as a teaser to the movie, do we want to read a plot synopsis or not?
I don't know anything. I want to keep it as I don't know.
Who hasn't already read the plot synopsis?
Yeah, anyone?
I better tell James to get off because James, I don't know if he said anything to you, but he has deliberately avoided watching any of the trailers or any information, and he wants to go into this as blindly as possible.
Well, maybe we should honor that, Jamie, then.
Yeah. Yeah,
I
think a lot of people have actually expressed that, but it doesn't have any spoilers for anyone out there. So anyone that's interested in reading it, the plot synopsis, I found the best, most comprehensive one is the back of the paperback book that actually comes out 2 days before the film, and it's on Amazon. It's the description of the paperback novel, and it looks like they're major stakes. I mean, Indiana Jones is in deep again, and he's going to find his way out of it one way or another, and that's what we love from the entire series. So the magic seems to be there, and we're hoping and praying on May 22nd that we'll all feel the same way.
Exactly.
Well, by 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday, we'll all know.
Yeah. Absolutely, my friend.
Yeah, and everyone on the line, and everyone in the chat room, and everyone that joined us tonight, we want to hear from you. On the 25th, we'll have our Sunday show, and we'll be welcoming a guest the second half of that show. But the first half, give us a call. Tell us what you think. We're going to give you our opinions on the new indie film, and we welcome everyone to join us and do the same. Guys, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, guys. It was a great time.
It was a wonderful time. Thank you.
It's been a wonderful, magical show. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull premieres at Cannes this Saturday, and it premieres worldwide, I think, probably midnight, May 22nd. Is that fair? Do you think that's what's going to happen? Okay. My switchboard has absolutely cut off, so I have no closing music. But thank you, Michael McCormick, for the great indie theme at the beginning. And we'll see you guys Sunday with Rutger Hauer.
There you go.
Good night, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye, guys.